Mr. Finkelstein, good morning, buddy. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. How are we doing?
I'm good, dude. So, I find this draft to be fascinating, maybe because I'm an NBA guy, and I want to start, if you don't mind, with Ace Bailey, because he's obviously in the news. Tried to finagle his way to specific places. The Ainge family said, "To hell with that. We're bringing you to Utah." Now there's reports that Ace Bailey told Utah not to draft him. Questions of whether he's going to show up. Can you just, how good is this? Like, what is this guy's ceiling range as a basketball player and a gamble for the Ainge family? What are we looking at here?
So what I would tell you is even before all of this drama about who he was going to work out for began, he was already viewed as a polarizing prospect. I considered him a top three prospect in this draft and still do based on the upside. And he's a 6'8" wing. He's a high level athlete and he's a tough shot maker. Now, those three things combined, like that's a very rare overlap of attributes and very translatable to the modern NBA. Now, there's questions about his feel. He's got a really low assist rate, a negative assist to turnover rate for somebody who's a high level athlete. He doesn't put as much pressure on the rim. He's got to develop his body. So he's a work in progress. And most of all, he's a little immature, but not in a malicious way, just kind of in a goofy young way. But everybody who's around him says he's a sweetheart of a kid. And that's what I find troubling about some of these narratives, because they're all kind of born out of his representation and how they've handled it. And if you watched him on the draft stage, he said, "I didn't have any idea Utah was interested in me." So I think he's a much better kid than people are portraying at this point as well.
Adam, let's say that the best case or the sort of reasonable case upside happens for Ace Bailey, and he becomes the player, like the best version of himself or a really great version of himself. How long are we talking about? What's his timeline, do you think?
Well, it's a few years away because he's got to develop his body. He's got to kind of figure out how to be efficient while simultaneously stretching himself, because I think that's the essence of how you really tap into your upside. So that's the challenge here. I will say this, and Bill, I've said this on the air the last couple of nights. When Danny Ainge first arrived in Utah, he shipped out Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, two guys who have driven quite a bit of winning since they left. And he said, "Hey, we're not good enough. And the way we are ultimately going to be better than this is by building through the draft." The problem is they haven't drafted especially well in the last few years. And I think that's why they brought in Austin to try and say, okay, like philosophically, we may believe in what we were doing all along here, but if we're not getting the draft right, it's not going to work. And so we need you to quarterback the draft. And I think Ace Bailey is the prospect long-term, although it's going to take some time, who gives them the best chance of having an all-star of anyone they've drafted since Danny Ainge arrived.
Adam Finkelstein here on the show. I'm Bill Ryder on this Friday on the Infinity Sports Network. Adam, Cooper Flagg, number one pick, not a surprise. We've known for a minute now that the Mavs luck boxed their way into that opportunity. We've heard a lot of high-level praise, historical comparisons about him over the last week or so. Obviously, he's the top guy in this draft. When you look back, how big of a talent is he compared to other giant names that are now in the NBA who came out and were the number one pick?
Yeah, I've watched Cooper since he was a freshman in high school, and he's a terrific talent and even a better competitor. Like, really gets after it, kind of has this quiet killer type mentality. Obviously, it's a cliche. He's not really a killer, just to clarify, but really smart, really competitive. I do think, though, that some of it's become hyperbolic, and it has been that way for a long time. He's been such a Google Analytics darling that since he was younger, that it invites these comparisons. Like, the amount of stuff I've heard, not just in recent weeks, but over the years, like better than Larry Bird, more athletic, or Kevin Garnett. Like, I heard so Scal compared him to LeBron James this week. Like, stop,
Right,
stop,
right.
stop. He's a really good player. And could he be an all-time great? I'm not telling you he won't be, but let's let him grow into it and see what he is, because what he's not quite yet is this dynamic ISO creator. And if you're going to be one of the all-time greats, which is what these people are talking about, like, that's who you've got to be. And so, you know, let's not compare him to the all-time greats. Let's not compare him to Wemby right now, because Wemby, let's be clear, is inherently more naturally gifted. So I have a hard time with all that. And I say that as someone who believes in his talent and personally likes him. And most of all, I think this is unfair to him, especially going to Dallas, where the narrative is going to be like, see, this is why we traded Luka Doncic, even though there was a less than 2% chance that this worked out.
Yeah, it was what an insane outcome. Adam, so full disclosure here, I wouldn't say I'm friends with Joe Dumars, but I am very friendly with Joe, and I caught up with him. He was the representative for the Pelicans. He's the GM there, obviously, in the lottery room when the lottery was decided. I was in there as an observer. I like Joe a lot, and he has taken a lot of mockery in the past, and very maybe understandably, he's taken some mockery this time around for moving up, 10 spots and giving away what could be the top pick in the draft next year, an unprotected pick that I think it's the best of not just theirs, but Milwaukee's as well. So with that context, how do you assess their draft at 7-13?
Well, let me start by saying I really like the value of Derek Queen at 13. I am not, I'm a little more skeptical on Fears. I think that archetype of kind of the playmaking lead guard, if you think he's worthy of a top-end lottery pick, then you better think he's capable of turning into your alpha playmaker. I'm not sure I buy that. I will say this, Bill. You know, when that pick came across in studio, and you know this, like, it's happening so fast, you see first-round draft pick, you're like, oh, this makes sense. And you just assume it's protected, right? It's lottery protected. Makes sense. Moves up 10 spots to get another first-rounder out of the deal. Yeah, great. And then you're like, I mean, at worst, it's top 10 protected, top 5, certainly. There's no way it's unprotected, because just for context, this 2026 NBA draft is really, really good. Arguably as good at the top as this one, and it's going to be deeper. So I thought that was inexcusable. I don't see a world in which Atlanta says, vetoes that deal if they put in a top 3 protection on it or a top 5 protection on it. And you know what? As much as I like Derek Queen, even if they did, then you have to walk away. Like, Derek Queen's not good enough that you risk a chance to get A.J. DeBonta, Darren Peterson, or Cam Boozer. Because let's be clear, Joe Dumars and Troy Weaver will be criticized now, and even more so if this blows up in their face a year from now, but so will Derek Queen, and this isn't Derek Queen's fault. You know, like, that's so I just can't understand how you would not throw some protection in on it. And truthfully, and I'm glad you prefaced it by saying you and Joe are friends, I didn't think his rationale was sufficient to say I've always been aggressive and that's how I've gotten results. Like, if you can't articulate your philosophy better than that, then that should be the test that the philosophy wasn't sound enough to put it into practice.
I could not agree more. I was utterly baffled, stupefied by them. I don't get it. And I, you know, you can like a guy, it doesn't mean that they've made a good decision. Adam Finkelstein here on the show. Adam, I don't know about you as sort of a observer of NBA basketball. Every now and then, I don't root for a team, right, because I do this for a living, but every now and then an organization cycles into a spot where I just really like watching them play, and I want them to have success, and that is true for me with the Spurs for a whole multitude of reasons. I just want them to be good. A lot of that's Wembanyama. I just want to see him as quickly as possible, play as meaningful basketball games as possible, and so I scrutinize or have interest in their moves in a way that maybe supersedes most other teams in the NBA. How did they do at number 2 in this draft?
Well, they didn't really have a decision to make, quite frankly, because just as Cooper Flagg was the no-brainer number 1, Dylan Harper was the no-brainer number 2. So that was always going to be the pick. The only decision they did have to make is whether or not they were going to entertain moving it. And they decided not to, and that was pretty clear as we came closer to the deadline. What I was told as we got closer is the pick they were actually looking to move was 14, because they were trying to trade up and get another big man. They really liked Kaman Malawach. They had him in for a workout. Malawach's representation would not have permitted that workout unless he thought there was a good chance that the Spurs were trying to trade up. As it turns out, Ace Bailey falls. Malawach is off the board. I'm sorry, not Ace Bailey. You know, lack of sleep here. Carter Bryant falls, and they get, I think, one of the best 3-and-D wings in the class. And if Bryant were not on the board, I expected them to take Joan Berenger, who's, you know, an athletic kind of rim-running lob threat monster measurements guy, to develop him alongside Wemby and get that center. But I think Bryant was too good to pass up on. So what I think you have now, Bill, is you've got two kind of main schools of thought. The one is like, okay, we've got Castle, we've got Harper, we've got Fox. Let's acknowledge that those pieces are not an ideal fit together. But those assets individually are still so valuable that we're going to see if we can make it work to the best extent possible. And by the way, if someone like Giannis becomes available, right, then we have an avenue where we can make a move and try and compete for a championship sooner rather than later. If no big deal does become available, then maybe we think about moving Fox and we just build strictly to the future, where it's based on Wemby, Castle, and Harper, and then everybody else on the floor with them better shoot the heck out of the basketball.
Adam, I'm glad you brought up Giannis, because that's where I was going to go, and I kind of want your expertise here. And obviously the Bucks don't want to move Giannis. If they do move him, if that happens, they would want to haul. The betting favorite for where Giannis lands right now today, if he moves this summer, is San Antonio. If you're John Horst, the GM in Milwaukee, between Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle and Carter Bryant, what is a reasonable ask in terms of which of or how many of those guys you insist are in a deal?
Well, I wouldn't trade Giannis if I'm in Milwaukee. I mean, I think Giannis is a generational talent, and what I would be focused on is trying to win the margins better than they have in recent years. And there's been a lot of people critical of that Dame Lillard trade. I actually think that we need to acknowledge that the Dame Lillard trade is what got Giannis to sign the extension in the first place. So that in and of itself had value. But I think this is a team that needs to draft a little bit better. You know, they took AJ Johnson last year, which I thought was perplexing. Allegedly, that was a Doc Rivers kind of driven thing. But if you look back at teams that have had kind of two iterations of competing around the same superstar or core superstars, it's because they've drafted really well. Think about the Spurs getting like Parker and Ginobili with late picks, and even Kawhi. Like, you know, I think the Bucks have to try and hit at a higher rate with some of these draft picks, and that's an avenue to being competitive. In a market like Milwaukee, you're not going to get Giannis again. You know what I mean? Like, I think you've got to ride this out. You've got to try and maximize it, but you've got to do a bit better job of building around him. And I understand there's all sorts of limitations right now in terms of how they can orchestrate their roster. But I think the draft is an area that if you're going to be self-reflective, you've got to look back on and say, hey, we need to do a better job in this area.
Adam, between Stephon Castle and Dylan Harper, who do you think has a higher ceiling, or at least who's more likely to hit that ceiling in their career?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I have posed that question to people in San Antonio. My personal opinion is Harper, but it comes with a big caveat, and that is it's not even the shooting, which I think he needs to address. It's durability. He missed time this year at Rutgers, and having watched him in high school, I can tell you that he was beat up at times in high school as well. And in the modern NBA, I don't need to tell you this, Bill, like, there's no more important factor if you're talking about competing for a championship than durability and being on the floor, especially when you're paired with somebody like Wemby, just because of his sheer dimensions is going to be prone to things potentially more often than others. So if Harper proves that he can stay healthy and be durable, Harper would be my guy. But I would want to play that out and see it, which is why I think it's wise that San Antonio said, you know what, we want more time with both of these guys, make sure we get the evaluation in-house. And by the way, if they both become better shooters, then they're a great pair for the next decade plus.
Adam Finkelstein, you are the man, dude. I love your insight. I love you making time for us. I know it's a busy time. I imagine you have not slept in a couple days. So hopefully rest is coming your way soon. And thank you, pal, for fitting us in.
Always. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you.